Episode 705, My Strength is My Story with Jill Davis, Food for the Journey.
Moms, needing a little inspiration and a ray of hope? You've come to the right place. This is the show that you can turn to for just the pick-me-up you need. This is Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. Here's your host, certified life coach, personal trainer, and nutritionist, Christiane Wargo.
Happy, happy day, ladies. Today is my Strength is My Story series, and I am so delighted to welcome in my good friend, author and speaker. Actually, she's a brand new TEDx speaker also, Jill Davis. She's written her book, Food for the Journey. You are going to love our conversation. Regardless of where you are on your journey when it comes to clean eating and food and how to eat and what to eat and all of that, I want you to listen in. I want you to be that fly on the wall because I promise you, you're going to learn something magnificent. Now, before we get into anything further here in details, I want to give a warm welcome to all of you that are brand new. Maybe you just discovered Create Your Now. You clicked on us. Maybe you're part of Jill Davis's family and her friendship. Welcome to Create Your Now. If you haven't already had the opportunity, you can learn more by heading to createyournow.com and you can sign up for the Kisses newsletter, the Keep It Simple Strategy, everyday solutions to finding the simple in every day. Jill has a magnificent way of breaking down food and making it simplistic for us. You will really, truly enjoy our conversation. Now, before I release the mic to our conversation here, I've got to give a special hello and a happy birthday to Maggie. Happy fifth birthday, Maggie. I hope you had a blessed one. We send our well wishes and birthday blessings to you. Now, get your coffee ready because it's time for My Strength is My Story. Hello and welcome to Create Your Now. I am so delighted to have my good girlfriend here, Jill Davis. She is an incredible woman. You are just going to be floored by her story today. She is a coach, a speaker, and the author of Food for the Journey. Stop fighting your weight, start finding your way. And guess what? She just spoke at TEDx. And I mean, talk about a woman on fire. She is definitely on fire. Jill, come on in. I'm so excited that you're here.
Oh, thank you so much. I am delighted to be here. It is so fun to be able to talk to you. And I love the fact that we have the internet and we have those wonderful airwaves up there that we can connect over distance and time.
Oh, yes. It just breaks through everything, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself so we can get to know you personally. I mean, this is a girlfriend coffee chat, so let's talk the good stuff.
Well, the good stuff is, well, the best stuff because I'm a mom is that I have four amazing kids. Mm-hmm. I live in gorgeous Colorado, and today is an exceptional day. I can't show you, but out my window is Pikes Peak covered in snow. I love this place, and I love to be here. I love to leave, and I love to come back. I have four kids. And they are range in age from 30 to 17.
Oh, my goodness. You have your hands full, Mom.
Well, I just have one left at home. I'm starting to feel a little sad, you know, and you know that. You have lots of kids, too. This last one's leaving here in a year and a half, and it's been an adventure. And I'm a very proud mama. And I have a grandbaby. She's 5 years old, and she's the love of my life. She's the cutest thing ever. And grandparenting is as much fun, if not more, than being a parent.
That's so, what I've been told.
It's pretty fun. I thought I was a little young when it happened, but it's been so much fun. I couldn't turn it down. It's just been a delight. And she turned 5 years old just a few days ago. So,
happy birthday! What is her name?
Her name is, I'll give you her whole name, is Magnolia Nicole Valadez Packard, but she goes by Maggie. So she is my Maggie Moo, and we have a great time together.
Well, we got to give a shout out. Happy birthday, Maggie Moo. We love you. Grandma says hi. Say hi, Grandma.
She will love that. She is a little bit of the star of the moment. Absolutely.
Oh, what a precious, precious age. Oh my goodness. And you, with all of that, you found time to write this incredible book, Food for the Journey. How'd you manage that?
Well, it's one of those things, you know, people keep referring to me as a writer, and I want to be really clear in honor of those people who are writers. I'm not a writer. I apparently am now an author, but I do not like to write. I am a speaker. And about I know this is going to sound horrible when I say it out loud, but 8 years ago, I started on this journey. And I would write a little bit, and then I'd file away, and then I'd write a little bit, and then I'd file it away. And finally, a friend of mine who owns Free Agent Press, he came to me and he said, it's time. Let's get this book out. And he gave me a deadline. And I missed it. And he was gracious enough to let me keep going. And we finished it in October. And the real reason that I wrote it is because I've been coaching on the subject for many years. Mm-hmm. And I'm so aware there's so many people who don't have, you know, I can't coach everyone.
Yes.
I can't get to everyone. And I want people to know they don't have to live there forever. And so the book is my effort to get the word out there, to get the information out there so that anybody who wants to pick up a book can get a book and read about it.
Oh, that is beautiful, Jill. I love it. And as you know, I already have mine. And I read it. It is awesome. It's amazing. You're definitely going to want to pick up your copy. We will have the link in the show notes so you can do that. Now, you said you've been kind of coaching this for a long time. I know the inside secret because I read the book. So let's go back to childhood when some of this started. Take us back there.
Oh, my goodness. You know, that's one of the interesting things about writing a book, and then I'll take us back there, is that when you write it, then you've written it. Yeah. And so to go back to that time, I do live there because I talk about it a lot. Mm-hmm. I am the youngest of six natural siblings. So there are six genetic children in my family. Mm-hmm. But on top of that, my parents were foster parents. There are always lots and lots of kids around. And of those six children, my parents lost two of them at 3 and 5. And so there was a lot of loss in our family, mm-hmm. a lot of loss. And so I got to grow up as the littlest, the youngest of all these children, and I had a wonderful little life. I got to play outside whenever I wanted to. I got to read whenever I wanted to. I got to eat whenever I wanted to. It was just a fun little life for a little girl, and I had a lot of fun. But my eating I was never diagnosed with an eating disorder,
okay.
But I believe my eating issues that were never diagnosed started when I was about 10 and I went through a growth spurt, which most little girls do. And one of the things that we know now is little girls typically go through a growth spurt where they kind of get, they haven't grown yet, mm-hmm. but they're growing out. And so they get a little bit bigger and then they get a little taller and then they get a little bigger and a little taller. Well, my mom was challenged by that because at 5'4", I am the tallest person in my family.
Wow.
And, yeah, I know. My dad is 5'6", but, you know, I put on a couple inch heels and I'm way taller than he is.
Of course.
So my mom got really worried about it, and she put me on a diet. And she didn't know, none of us knew back then. I mean, only now is the research coming out, how bad diets are for us. So I will say this like 1,000 times, I promise, but diets don't work. We know that via research and via anecdotal stories, diets don't work, but we didn't know that back in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And so she put me on a diet of about, now that I know about calories, looking back at about 800 plus a few calories a day when I was 10 years old, right in the middle of my growth spurt. And that was the beginning of my introduction to the great American famine of women in our country that's called dieting.
Yes. Yes, that diet can get us and suck us in every single time. And I know right now the listeners can relate to that because what's around the corner? New Year's. And what is like the number one New Year's resolution?
To lose weight.
That's right, to lose weight. But you don't call it to lose weight. You say something else in your book. What is that?
I call it weight release because, and I know that your listeners can relate to this. I don't know very many people who don't, but I lose my keys at least once a day. Like seriously, at least once a day. But I always hope to find them again. I hope that they don't stay lost forever. And when we talk about losing weight, that means like it's something we misplaced and we want to find it again, which is what we typically do. And so I talk about weight release, and it's even more than that. It's about learning to just not just necessarily accept ourselves where we are, because where we are may not be super healthy, but accepting the fact that this is our beautiful body. It's ours. We get to do with it what we want to. It's our precious gift to the world. I mean, I just am so passionate about accepting who we are, where we are, and then loving ourselves into health, not beating ourselves into weight loss.
Mm-hmm. That took you, though, many years to get to that point, didn't it, Jill?
Oh, my gosh. I don't necessarily like to talk about all those years, but we will for today because it's girlfriend time, right?
That's right. It's we spill it all. We're real and raw here. That's it. We just let it all hang out. Well, maybe not all.
But the real and raw part of it is because of my life, I chose to get married very young, and I didn't make great decisions in those choices. And I went into a controlling and manipulative and in many ways abusive marriage. Mm. And I stayed there for 25 years. And in those 25 years, I went from 120 pounds when I got married. I was actually 118. I remember it so vividly. And I went from that weight to when I left and got divorced, I weighed 265 pounds. That's a lot of weight.
That's a lot of weight.
A lot of pain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that weight, because when you were a child, obviously your mother kind of, I mean, because you say that multiple times, she was doing the best that she knew how. Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, you were still dieting of what we call now yo-yo dieting. When did the trend come for you in your life where it just continued to grow?
That's a great question. And thank you for saying that. My mother loved me deeply. She just didn't know any different. And you know, as a mom, I have made mistakes as well. She just didn't know. And so she loved me and she wanted the best for me. And when it actually finally, I just gave up was between my second. So I have one who's 30, one who's 27. And then 7 years later, I got this other kid who is now 20. And when I got pregnant with him, I was so sad and I was so beat down. I just gave up. And I decided that I would just be me, and I was destined to be fat because fat genes ran in my family. Mm. And I became much more conscious about my outer appearance as far as I dressed to the nines. I never left the house without my makeup and my hair done and a perfect outfit on, hoping that somehow that would make me feel better inside. Mm. And it didn't. And it took from that point when I got pregnant with him until I finally left was about another 9 years, 10 years. It was about 10 more years.
Wow.
Yeah. Cause that would have been in 96. Yeah. It was about 10 years and I left in 06.
Mm.
And I just gave up. I just said, I'm just going to be fat the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. And what did that do to you emotionally?
You know, people who knew me back then would say, oh, but you were so busy. You were so happy. You were so full of joy. We never knew. And I was really good at making the outside look really pretty. And I always tell people, never compare your outside with somebody's inside. We looked like the perfect family, four perfect achieving children, very successful in the community, very successful in our careers. And how I felt on the inside was I went to bed thinking, what is wrong with you that you can't control the way you eat? And I'd wake up in the morning beating myself up about being so fat. I worried about putting my eating issues on my children. I thought about food constantly. Mm. I spent so much energy. You know, I look back and I think that was from my mid-30s to my mid-40s, you know, one of the most productive times of our lives. And I spent more energy worrying about how bad I was because I ate four chocolate chip cookies than if I was changing the world.
Mm. Wow, that is powerful, Jill. And especially when you said, don't compare your outside to someone else's inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something I believe that we get so trapped up in. In fact, in your book, and I'm telling y'all, you need to pick one of these up. You're going to want the read. And not only are you going to want to pick it up because inside, let me see if I can flip to it here. There is... Okay, you're not going to be able to see it really well, but there's a journal. This is a working book for you. So we will make sure to have the link in the show notes. But when you were going through all of that, you know, you mentioned in the book about being bullied. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very interesting. Define first bullying in your eyes, because there's lots of different definitions out there, especially it's a huge topic of discussion in schools nowadays. Mm-hmm. How do you define bullying?
I think bullying is when, and I've never actually been asked that question. So this is totally off the top of my head. But I think bullying is when we say things that are angry and mean to someone mm-hmm. because we feel inadequate. when we tell someone else how bad they are because we feel so inadequate.
Yes. And I'm sorry to interrupt you. It's like we are putting, you know, extending how we feel onto them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it causes so much pain. It, you know, and my daughter was bullied and I watched it happen. And then she took it internally and she believed it was about her. And then she did what I did to myself, which I began bullying myself. And I think that that's what we as women especially are. And I know men do it too. I raised three men. I love men. We do it to ourselves. We start bullying ourselves. And we say things to ourselves, those of us who are genuinely kind, that we would never say to anybody else. But we say it to ourselves. And we beat up on ourselves. And it's funny that, you know, I use the word bully in the book because I want it to be for all genders. Mm-hmm. But in my real world, I think of it as the mean girl in our head.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And that mean girl likes to work overtime for most of us.
Yeah, because she feels inadequate. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so even though it's us, it's this mean girl part of us that, you know, we could go into the psychology of it, but the part of us that says, you are never going to measure up. And the truth is, I've never met anyone yet who doesn't have that voice in their head.
Yeah. Yeah, it just depends on which level it is, whether you're talking profession, whether you're talking about weight and body image, which you talk a lot about. I mean, bullying leads us into what you call body shaming.
Body shaming, absolutely. Yeah. And I am so happy. In 2000, so this is 16, I have to keep track of my statistics
Subtraction,
here.
Subtraction math.
Yeah, not my strength. I don't bully myself about that. But in 2015 was the first year statistically that body shaming did not increase. Now, we didn't have a decrease, but we didn't have an increase. Mm. So the hope is, as we look across social media, as we look at print media, as we look at women's conversations, I see women slowly, but at least it's happening, beginning to stop the body shaming and recognizing no one has the perfect body. It does not exist. It just doesn't. We all have beautifully shaped bodies that I want everyone to fall in love with their own body.
Oh, I love that. Love your reflection. That's what we all need to do. Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Absolutely.
And you learned to do that because you got to this point, you let it all go. And then something happened.
So I never, you know, in those years of that large weight at 265, I still hated myself. Mm-hmm. And statistically, and I, every time I say this, I mean, I spoke about this on TEDx, but every time I say it, it like makes me want to cry. 90% of women in America say, I hate my body or I hate this body part at least once a day. Yes. And what used to be a women's issue, it's now 60% of men statistically hate their bodies. And even for me, it breaks my heart even more to know that 40% of our 10-year-old girls are either on a diet or wanting to go on a diet because they don't like their bodies. And so the way that we feel about our bodies has just, we've got to bring an end to it. I never stopped body shaming until I got divorced. Mm-hmm. And when I got divorced, I just thought there was way too much else going on in my life to deal with hating on my body. You know,
That's right.
I just no longer had the time for it. Even as busy as I was when I was married, because I owned a business. I was married to a military officer who was a commander. So I had that. I home educated my four children. I was very busy, but I still had time to hate myself. Mm-hmm. And when I got divorced, all I could think of was, oh my gosh, I have to do all that and pay the bills. How am I going to make this happen? And so I didn't have time to hate myself anymore. Mm. So that was when I started learning the body, you know, unlearning body shaming. And I started down the path that is now the story that has become this book.
Yes. And it is a beautiful story. I mean, I'm telling you, you know, you mentioned the 10-year-olds. And it is really sad that, you know, I can remember a situation. I went to our neighborhood pool with our children and I was sitting there just kind of enjoying the heat because I'm always cold. So I don't care what time, if I got the sun, I'm going to take it and soak it all up. But I was watching the children And it was so sad to see the ones that were overweight. And then I thought, and their parents weren't around. They probably were dropped off. They're old enough to be there. And, you know, so they were just playing with their friends. And sometimes I think that the kids really truly don't know any better. And then I also think that the moms especially, dads maybe a little bit, but the moms especially are struggling to help their older weight, overweight child. What would you, I mean, you were that. Your mom really made sure. I mean, skinny, like you said, was an in thing, you know, for when you were growing up. What would you tell that mom that has an overweight child?
Oh, thank you for asking that question. One of the things we know developmentally is 8 years old is about the age typically, or has, you know, in the past been the age when a girl starts to recognize, oh, I'm individuating from my family. I have this body and social media says it should look like this. So I would love to tell you I did not put eating issues on my children. I did. They were all, you know, growing up when I was going through all this stuff. We've all worked through it. They continue to work through it. But the number one thing is do not, oh, please, please do not scold your child or correct them for eating things that you think are bad, because it's not bad food. You know, provide them with the healthiest food possible. Allow them joy, what I call joy food. You know, we have taste buds for a reason.
Right.
I love M&Ms, you know.
Go chocolate. I'm right there with you, girl.
Exactly. So don't constrain them. That's what happens when we diet. We constrain. We become what are called controlled eaters, meaning we control everything we put in our mouth. Mm-hmm. So if you are controlling your child's eating, then they will become a controlled eater and begin to obsess about food. Mm-hmm. So encourage your child to enjoy life. You know, one of the reasons I was able to stay minimally healthy through my adolescence was because I was a Colorado girl, which means that we love the outdoors. We love to climb mountains. We love to climb trees. We love to go fishing, all of those things. And I was able to do that. So if you have a child of any age, I just worked with a gentleman whose daughter is in college and who is gaining that dreaded, you know, freshman, whatever. And he kept saying, thinking, I need to send her to an eating specialist. I said, please, please don't do that. Because if you do, what will happen is that she will start to obsess about her food. She'll obsess about what's going on. She'll want to know, what am I going to do? How did I get fat? And that's not what we want. We want them to learn to love their bodies and to eat when they're hungry and stop when they're full. And one of my taglines is, you can eat anything you want as long as you listen to your body.
Ooh, love it. Can I eat my M&Ms now?
If you're hungry, absolutely. Listen okay. to your body.
I'm not hungry, but I just figured, you know, I mean, think about it. We have, like, we're having this across the airways, but we think about going to the movies. And what does the movies involve? Not just the show we're watching, but we got to have the buttery popcorn. We got to have the soda pop. And it can't, I mean, we can't have anything healthy there. Everything we do, Jill, revolves around food. How do you deal with that?
You know, that's such a good question, especially this time of year, because we are going to people's houses. People are bringing us food. It's not, I want to tell you there's an instant cure for it, and there's not. It takes time to figure it out. But number one is to eat when you're hungry and stop when you're full. Because what happens is we eat when we're not really hungry, and then once it tastes good, we just keep eating because that's how we know to do it. So we eat past full. And when we do that, we do create issues with our body. Our body doesn't know how to respond. And so it's really important to work with yourself, not with your child, unless it's really a child, but to recognize hunger and full signals. Most of us have forgotten what hunger feels like. And most of us have no clue what fullness feels like because we always eat past it and we never actually get to real hunger.
Mm. So well said. I mean, it's like we eat with our eyes.
And we eat with our social skills too.
Yes.
You know, I was at an event this morning and I love to observe people, especially when they're like in eating situations, and I never tell them. But so if you're
your secret's out now.
Exactly. So I may be watching you. Don't get uncomfortable. But okay, people are always saying, I'm going to have, like this morning, I'm going to have 4 slices of bacon. I just love bacon. I don't care how bad it is for me. Or they say things like, you know, well, I had a party last night, so I was really bad, so I have to be good today. And people start taking food and putting moral character on it. Mm. I am bad if I overeat cookies. I'm good if I eat healthy, quote unquote, healthy things. Mm-hmm. And then we begin to feel that way about ourselves, that we are good or bad based on the foods that we consume. We are morally good or bad based on the foods that we consume. So that's another part of it. So it's hard to say you're going to learn to be hungry, you're going to learn to stop eating when you're full, and you can do that at grandma's house. Because when we go to grandma's house, it does not always happen that way.
No.
But if you will remember, and this is something that, you know, we all want to remember, but sometimes we forget, is we are more focused on what we're doing than anybody else is. Mm-hmm. They are thinking about themselves, mm-hmm. not about what you're doing. So when I'm at someone's house, and I know it's important for them to, for me to eat their food, I take a bite or two. If I'm in a social setting, I'll take a bite or two if it's something that tastes good. And I do try hard to pay attention to my hunger and full. So if I have a big party coming up, I don't eat at 2 o'clock in the afternoon if the party's at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. I want to be hungry when I show up. Mm. So if you're hungry, you know, and they used to teach us, make sure you're not hungry when you go to a party. But I find that then you're still going to overeat because you already ate once and then you're going to feel guilty and overeat again. Mm-hmm. So I really encourage people to go to social events with a little bit of hunger and stop the minute they know that they're full. And most people don't know how to recognize what fullness feels like. You want to hear a little trick on how to recognize fullness?
Oh, please tell me.
So most of us have spent our lives in this world of huge abundance, mm-hmm. where there's, you know, I could walk downstairs and have more food in my house right now than many people have in, you know, in a week. It's all in my house. Yes. So I could eat all day long and never end. Mm-hmm. So what happens is we forget what fullness feels like. Our portion plates are like humongous. They're so big. And we think
supersized.
And we think that that's a, you know, one meal for one person. And then we have salad or soup before and dessert afterwards and a couple glasses of wine. And we're way over full at that point. And so if we remember that when our taste buds stop working, that's when we're probably full. So one of my favorite foods is, and I'm going to brand name here. I'm not promoting
okay.
them. This is my favorite thing, is I love Chick-fil-A chicken nuggets. Like, I love them. I think it's a throwback to when my kids were little and they were only decent chicken nuggets out there. And I love them. And so I will get them. And, you know, I always get an 8-pack because it's cheap. But what I do is I know after about the first bite is delicious. It's like so yummy and it tastes mm-hmm. so good. By the third or fourth nugget, there's not so much good taste anymore. And that's my indicator. Even if my body's not yelling at me, I'm full. The moment the last bite does not taste as good as the first bite, stop. Just stop right there. Put it aside. You can have it later. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like we can't go back and get whatever it was that we loved. We can put it in the fridge, eat it later. We can go back to the grocery store. We can go back to Chick-fil-A. We have a world of abundance in food. It's not going anywhere.
Wow. Okay. So everybody digest that. Did you hear what she said? After that taste is no longer as good as that first bite, we are to stop. If we would eat like that, we wouldn't have issues, would we, with weight, Jill?
Probably not, because our bodies are created to tell us when to stop eating and when not to eat good things. You know, my daughter, when she was little, she didn't like certain foods, really didn't like them. And, you know, one of them was carrots. And we would kind of fuss because carrots are healthy and you really should eat your carrots. Well, when she was about 4, I had a massive allergic reaction to carrots. Oh. And my throat swelled up. I broke out in hives. It was really emergency kind of situation. Well, what we found out after that is she was allergic to carrots. Her body knew she shouldn't be eating them, but she was too little to tell anybody that this feels weird. You know, she just knew mm-hmm. carrots made her feel funny, but didn't understand. So our bodies are designed to help us to know what to eat and what would be best left on the plate.
Woo! I don't know about you all, but I'd be clicking on the link to pick up your book, Food for the Journey, because you need it for the journey. And you know what? Give it as a gift. Maybe you already own it. Pick it up for someone else. Sometimes it's hard to talk to people about weight. I have some very good girlfriends, and like we've talked about already, it's a very sensitive subject. And so maybe this would help start the discussion out of love and concern for your friend. So if you already own it, pick up an extra one. I mean, this is the season of giving. And as Jill can attest to, I mean, it wasn't her losing the 135 pounds. Obviously, for her health, that was awesome. But she regained who she was.
Mm-hmm. And that is exactly the... I love that you get the point of the book. And one of the things that I tell people when I give it to them is it may or may not be for you. But I want you to recognize that in this book, it's not just about... It doesn't, you may notice it doesn't say it's a diet book. Mm-hmm. It doesn't say about how to lose weight. Mm-hmm. It simply says start finding your way. Even if you're the kind of person who doesn't struggle with your weight, and there are actually people out there like that, which shocked me when I found out there are people who have never had to deal with weight issues because mm-hmm. they didn't go into emotional overeating. But whatever it is, it's keeping you from living your best life, your fullest life. This book will help you find your way. There are tips and tidbits and stories to help you just take what you know about life and just do it either a lot better or a little bit better and enjoy the journey that much more.
Oh, and you got to see the cute pictures of Jill. I'm just saying there's some pretty adorable ones with her cute little dress and she's dancing with her mama. Yeah, I'm not going to show those pictures because you got to look them up yourself by getting the book, I tell you. All right. Well, you have just taken us truly on a whirlwind. And one thing I wanted to mention that you were talking about feeling full, you actually call it a fuel gauge, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Everything that I know is nothing new. Like, this is research that's been around for 40 years. We just are just now starting to talk about it because we're recognizing diets don't work. These are all my ways of helping somebody to assimilate like the years of research I've done into one book. And so I call it the body fuel gauge. And I do that because when I started learning about it, I am not a car geek. Now, my boyfriend, he's a total car geek and he knows all about cars and he can tell you, you know, all the details about like miles per gallon. And, you know, I should know all this stuff, but I don't. But what I do know is if my car runs out of gas, it quits running. Mm-hmm. And I'm old enough to remember the days before we had automatic shutoffs on the hoses, you know, the gasoline yes. hose. And if you didn't stop squeezing it, that gas would run out over the car and all down your clothes and on your shoes on the way to high school. It was terrible. So I can relate to a fuel gauge or a body fuel gauge. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think it matters where you live, but especially in cold climates, we never let, and if you do, you need to talk to somebody about this. You should never let your car go down to the empty mark in right. cold climate because we can get stuck somewhere with no gas. Mm-hmm. Well, our bodies are the same way. We should never let our bodies go down where they're starving hungry. Sometimes we're in a situation where it's not possible to avoid that. Mm-hmm. But for most of us, we can usually get food pretty easily. So you want to make sure to eat, to start eating when your hunger gauge is around, your fuel gauge is about at a quarter of a tank, or I call it the number 4 point.
Okay.
That's where you're starting to go, okay, I'm starting to feel a little hungry. And in the book, and we can talk about it in a few minutes if we have time, but in the book, I have a list of the difference between feeling emotionally full and emotionally hungry and physically hungry. They are different. Yes. And so when you are physically hungry, you want to go, by the time you're at about a quarter tank or at a number 4 on a scale of 1 to 10, that's the time you want to start eating. You don't want to wait till you're ravenous because your body's survival skills will kick in and you will not be able to stop, or it's unlikely that you'll be able to stop when you hit full. Mm-hmm. And then if we are mindful in our eating, which is something else that has gone away in our country, yes. if we are mindful and our taste buds no longer say that tastes yummy, stop And you never really want to go past 6, even on Thanksgiving, even on Christmas, even on New Year's. Stopping at 6, you're going to feel so much better. Mm-hmm. So I really recommend staying between the 4 and the 6. And here's something that isn't in the book. You want something that's not in the book?
Yes, please.
Get it all in there. I could not get it all in there. Is that when we have eaten past full for our entire lives, it's really hard to recognize when we're full. But if you will start recognizing that and stop eating past full, your body will start telling you. You don't have to rely on your brain to do it forever. Your body will start doing it. When I weighed 265 pounds, I never felt great, but I never felt awful. But now, if I eat past full, which I still do on occasion, I get ravenous and I'll eat too much, or I'll be at a party and I'll be talking and forget that I'm eating, yes, and I'll go past full, you know what happens? My tummy hurts. Like, it hurts. And my body is telling me, oops, you overdid that. We don't have to rely on your mind forever, just while you're learning the skill. And then it kicks in and it all becomes just second nature.
Yeah. Instead of running and grabbing those antacids so quickly, oh, my tummy hurts because I ate so much. No, retrain. I love it. Retrain. Oh, my goodness. You just have an abundance of knowledge in this book, jam-packed. So you'll definitely want to pick up your copy. Jill, you made a statement in your book, and you said, and I just want you to kind of, you know, dive deeper in there. Okay. With this statement. We are not good or bad based on what we eat.
Thank you. I'm so glad. You're a great reader, by the way. You found good stuff.
Thank you.
That actually is the subject of my TEDx talk, is about that we are not good or bad morally based on the foods that we eat. And I'm going to just do a real quick plug on that. If you're looking for my TEDx talk and it's not the end of December 2016, you won't be able to find it. It will be up on TEDx.org in the end of 2016. So it's not there yet. But the concept is, we have stopped body shaming. Mm-hmm. We are slowing down body shaming. We have not stopped it. But we food shame. Mm-hmm. And I live in one of the healthiest states in the entire country. And it's very interesting to live here. And I travel all over the country. And when I first started telling people that we are not good or bad morally based on the foods we eat, they started thinking about organic and humanitarian, you know, humanely killing the cows. And I'm like, no, that's not it at all. When I go to other states, they're like, yeah, I am bad if I eat too many cookies. So it's a whole different mindset. Mm-hmm. But what happens is we will look around and we believe that our moral character is based on, number one, if we're overweight or not, because we have in our society a concept that people and children who are overweight are somehow lazy. I can't even think of all the words. I'm not even going to say them, but all these different words that we put on people who are overweight. Mm-hmm. And so we begin to think about the foods that we think make people overweight as good or bad. And then we start judging ourselves on that. And the story that I use in my TEDx talk is about a dear friend of mine who, she and I started this journey of divorce and life together at about the same time. I lost 135 pounds. She lost about 85 pounds. And in the process, we learned to love food because food is a wonderful gift that we have. Yeah. And she started in a place where she, you know, learned to love food, learned to love herself, lost the weight. And then at her wedding, she just got remarried. Oh. I was there at the cake table. You know, what do we do in our society? We celebrate. Yes. We celebrate food with food. We love to celebrate with food. And we were celebrating her new marriage with food. And we had a beautiful cake there. And I went up to the cake table to get the cake. And as I stood there, I heard people talking about, I can't have any of the cake because I've been so bad. And I can have cake today because I was good. Or there's the one that says, I'll eat as much cake as I want because I've been so bad today. And the truth is that piece of cake is morally neutral. It has no moral character, but we put it on ourselves. And even if we're just using the words, we still think about ourselves as good or bad as the foods, based on the foods we eat. You can eat anything you want as long as you listen to your body.
And that's key. You got to listen to your body. And I love that you continually stress that, Jill, even throughout your book, because we aren't listening. We are totally bombarded in social media, in regular media, on Netflix. I mean, everything. I mean, commercials come up, you know? I mean, think about the Super Bowl. How many commercials come up that are food related? I mean, all of a sudden you're just salivating, you know? You watch a little puppy dog and he can see you eating and he can smell it. And he's like, I want some now, you know? What is it, you know, that we feel that, well, if we eat like this, we are better. I mean, have you gone into a Whole Foods store and seen nothing but thin, fit people? No. You don't, right? And you're
no.
like, you know, but we do. We put that upon ourselves and we give power by the words we use and by the food that we eat. We give that power.
Mm-hmm. And there's one other word that we use that's a moral word that just drives me nuts. Like, this is like my pet peeve. And so I'm going to share it with you. Share it with you in a story?
Of course.
A story format?
Definitely.
Okay, so I have been divorced for 10 years, mm-hmm. and I swore I would never, ever get married again. I was never even going to have a long-term relationship. I was done with that. Well, I met a guy, I fell in love, and he wants to be in a committed relationship. It's kind of exciting, except for the fact I've dated for a really long time, and I really like dating. And you know, you've been married a long time. When you have that committed relationship, the kind of excitement of a new date disappears.
Yes.
So I went to Jamie and I said, you know, here's the deal. I really, really like you, and I want to date you, but only 6 days a week. One day a week, I'm going to cheat. That's all I'm going to do is I am going to cheat one day a week, and it's going to be fun. And he didn't respond well. And no kidding, I didn't really do that. Because how would we ever even think about cheating on somebody?
Yes.
We wouldn't do that. Nope. We would never do that. Because we know that cheating is wrong. I mean, there's just something morally, we are not supposed to cheat on the people we love. Mm-hmm. But the big diet trend right now is cheating on our diets, cheating on what we're eating. I look at it as cheating on our beautiful bodies. Mm-hmm. If I'm not going to cheat on this man that I love, how could I possibly cheat on my beautiful body?
Yeah.
And we hear over and over, what's your favorite cheat day food? Mm-hmm. What's your favorite way to cheat? And it's like, I don't cheat. I just don't do that. I didn't cheat in grade school. I don't cheat now. But we use that moral word. And I'm sure there's many more, but that's just my current pet peeve.
Oh, that's an excellent point, Jill. Totally. I mean, we do. We cheat all the time. I hear it now, you know, as a personal trainer and you know, you've got all these different supplements out there and people are like, well, you work out, but you got to have your cheat day. And some say your cheat 2 hours, like if you're going to go to the movies and you want that movie popcorn and, you know, make that your cheat time. Or you can have, you know, 6 hours of cheat time. You can eat whatever you want till you're full. And does that really work? No, of course it doesn't.
And I have to tell you that the thought of that, when I think of how I live my life now, cheating for a day, just you talking about like having 6 hours where I can eat anything I want. If I'm not listening to my body and I eat anything I want, I'm going to have a tummy ache.
Yeah.
If I allow my 2-year-old brain to eat whatever it wants, my adult body is going to pay for it afterwards.
Yes. Yeah. And it's going to be more than a tummy ache.
Yeah, I just when you say that, it's like, oh my gosh, I don't think this is gonna be successful for me. So, but we do. We put so much morality on food, and then we put it on ourselves, and then that mean girl in our head or the bully in our head kicks in and starts talking about what a bad person we are because we're using moral words around food, morality around food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a definite different twist. A lot of people don't talk about it that way. And in fact, in your book, you go even a little bit deeper as into our personality traits, which I find, okay, so that's the kind of geeky part in me I find totally fascinating.
Well, I do talk about personalities because it's so important. And we've known each other for a little bit. And I work with something called the DISC behavioral style. Mm-hmm. And I won't geek too much, but I'll just geek a little bit.
Okay,
it's
please.
It's based on a concept from William Marston from 1928, a book he wrote called The Emotions of Normal People. Mm-hmm. And it's basically, for those of you who are not geeking out with me, it's just about understanding why we do what we do and why other people do what they do. Mm-hmm. But if I try to eat or exercise, because that's what I address in the book is about exercise, like a different personality style than I'm wired to be, I will never succeed. And so I'm a very, and I'll just, if we have time, I'll just real quickly go through the four personality styles and the best kind of exercise. Because what we know from research is exercising is not an indicator of whether or not you're healthy. Mm-hmm. It's not an indicator of whether or not you're going to lose weight. It's an indicator of how strong you can be and how healthy you can create your body. But it's not the only indicator. Mm-hmm. And so we can lose weight. We can listen to our bodies on hunger and full without exercising. But the more that we do choose to do some form of exercise, the stronger we feel.
Yes.
And that's important because when we feel strong in our bodies, we feel strong in everything. Mm-hmm. But there are four personality styles and they all need to exercise a little differently. So we have the D, which is the directive personality style. You can kind of think of those people as people who are tough and strong, typically in charge of the world. They want an exercise that's going to be fast and quick, and they're going to get it done. We have a couple companies here in our town. I'm not going to mention them because I don't want to do that, but who do 20-minute workouts. Mm-hmm. That's the perfect kind of workout for a D. Get in, get it done, get out, feel good. Okay, yes. Bullet points, even our exercise. Then we have the I style personality, which I call the gift of entertainment or the influencing personality style. That would be me. I am not going to go to a 20-minute gym because I don't want to get in and get out. I want to go play with my girlfriend. So for us, the best person type of exercise is something that's with a group, yes, like Zumba, or I can't even think of some of the other ones, yoga, those types of exercises. And I will even get on a treadmill if my best friend is with me for an hour conversation. You better believe I'll meet her at the gym to do that.
That's right.
Then we have our S styles who like comfort. Mm-hmm. They prefer, they're very steady, very stable. It's good for them to work out on a schedule. As long as it's always consistent, they don't have to get too far out of their comfort zone, then they're going to be content. And then we have our C's. And our C's are what I call our cerebrals. They like structure. Mm-hmm. And they are the ones who are great at competitive sports. They like to have a goal. So golf is a great one for them because it's very much just about how much more I can improve myself. They're great marathon runners. All of those things where they're competing against themselves or against someone else, they do really, really well. But setting up challenges for themselves and completing their checklist is important. Mm-hmm. And so if I were to do that, I'd go crazy. But one of my children is that personality, and he has this whole structured form on his wall while he was getting ready to go into the Air Force of, you know, when to work out, how many hours to work out, which activity, and he loved it. So each style, each personality style is definitely important as we learn to move our body, because that's another important aspect of really becoming healthy in this journey.
Wow, that is fascinating, Jill. And I believe you have something on your website regarding that they can go to about taking kind of like a mini disc profile. Like if no one's ever done that, they may have heard of it. Where can they find that?
So there's two different places they can do it. In the back of the book, there's a mini disc profile. It's just a little one, and it's just designed to help you to get an understanding of what your primary personality profile would be. Okay. But if you go to my website, just go to jilldaviscoaching.com, go to the store, and you can purchase one of these for $25. They're very inexpensive, and it will really help you to understand your strengths and weaknesses and how to improve your strengths and how to reduce your weaknesses.
Oh. Love it. Okay, I'm heading there myself, so you all need to head there too. Oh my goodness, what haven't we covered? I mean, a woman who has lost 135 pounds, she has gained more than a wealth of knowledge. You are just truly a gem, Miss Jill Davis.
Well, thank you so much. It's always my passion to make a difference for other people. It's like to shorten that learning curve so that other people don't have to go through quite as much pain as perhaps I did or other people are going through. I just want to bring that shorten that learning curve down so that we can live in the joy that we're designed to live in.
Oh, yes. And you call it, in your book, you say brave, beautiful you. Expand on that just a little bit.
Thank you. It's so fun that you picked up on that. I really believe that all of us really are brave, beautiful us. And in part of that is, that's also part of my branding. We are going to, you don't even know this, so I have another secret for you. In the fall, we're going to be debuting another program, because the truth is not everyone is aware of, you know, food is not an issue for everyone, mm-hmm. for most of us, but not for everyone. And so we are creating another program and another book, oh my gosh, called Create a Life of Mischievous Joy. And it will be part of the Brave, Beautiful You branding, because I want every woman out there to know how brave she is. It takes a, you know, I'm going to get teary. It takes a lot of bravery sometimes just mm-hmm. to get up and get the kids ready for school yeah. or to get up and go to work and know that you don't have a partner today and you want one.
Yes.
So every woman is brave. Every woman is beautiful. And every woman is uniquely herself, hence the you. Brave, beautiful you. It's my passion to make a difference for women so they can embrace their own brave, beautiful you-ness.
Oh, that is beautiful. I'm already crying. I've had my tissue close by because I knew after already reading the book that I would need it. Because Jill, you are truly beautiful from the inside out, but also from the outside in.
Thank you so much. That's a great compliment. I do appreciate it.
Well, and so you've gone through, I mean, a ton, you know, from childhood to now to losing, you've had the ups and downs. Talk about a roller coaster of life. I have one question for you. What has your story gifted you?
Oh, that's such an incredible question. I actually spoke with a woman this week and explaining to her that I see a gift in everything. Mm. And so what my story has gifted me, there's so many questions, statements around that.
We have one time. Thing,
okay. So one thing it has gifted me is to learn to be non-judgmental. Mm. In my early days when I was successful and we had money and my kids were performing, I judged people. If they were not at my level, there was something wrong with them. And when you become the object of judgment, you learn that there is no judgment possible. We cannot compare our outsides to someone else's insides. And when we do, we become judgmental, either of them or of ourselves. Mm-hmm. So that would be the first thing, is to become non-judgmental. Mm-hmm. I have a basic four tenets that is part of my life that I learned. And so these are my gifts. I will share these gifts.
Okay.
The first one is learning to breathe. Mm-hmm. I learned to breathe. For so much of my life, I held my breath. And I held my breath because I was afraid, because I was scared, because I didn't know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I learned to breathe through that, and then that fear becomes excitement. And I have found an excitement for life that I never had before. Mm-hmm. The second step is to be present. In a whole nother story of my life, one of my children was a heroin addict. Mm. And he came and told me that he was a heroin addict. And we worked through it together, and he's now in full recovery. He's the father of that beautiful grandbaby.
Aww.
But I learned to be present to him, because everything else, the dishes, the work, the whatever I thought was important, was not as important as being present in that moment. Mm. So I work and I pay attention to be present. That was a gift. Mm-hmm. The next one is to be grateful. And in all those years that I had so much on the outside, I thought I was grateful. You know, I was grateful for my husband, and I was grateful for security, and I was grateful for the money in the bank, and I was grateful for the beautiful house. And then I didn't have them anymore. And I couldn't find what to be grateful for. So I learned to be grateful for really, really simple things. And even now, that's what I'm grateful for. My daughter jokes and she says, I prefer coffee-flavored cream instead of coffee. But coffee is where I learned to create gratitude again. Mm. Because when life was falling apart and I could smell the coffee, I could breathe it in, I could be present with the moment, I became grateful because I remembered a time when I was in Ethiopia at a coffee ceremony, watching women cook coffee using their feet, you know, to roast the coffee beans. Mm-hmm. And I watched them roast those coffee beans and prepare this coffee ceremony for me out of gratitude for me being there. Mm. And I realized that just the simple coffee bean has so much to be grateful for, from the people who grew it to the people who brought it to my country, to the people who roasted it and put it in a little red can called Folgers, to the people who took it to Target so I could go buy it at the grocery store. All of those places, gratitude comes from within and appreciation. Mm. So that was another gift. And then my very last gift that I learned, and this is why I do what I do, so this is one of my biggest gifts, is to be in community. Mm. Mm-hmm. We as people are designed to be in community together. That's why your listeners are listening, because we're having conversation.
That's right.
And they get to hear and participate. But when I got divorced, I lost my family of origin and my church family. Mm. And so I realized I had a sisterhood that I had chosen, and I don't know if I would have made it without them. So my big desire in life is to create community in places where women do not feel that they have community, non-judgmental, with much love and acceptance for exactly who we are right in this moment. And those are my gifts.
You are a brave, beautiful you, Miss Jill Davis.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. I don't know about you all, but my notes, my hands, you're going to have to replay this one over again, because I am truly grateful that we've had you on today. And because you let us in on that little secret, I'm just going to boldly ask you, will you come back for a second time at least?
I would love to come back. And I'm just as excited. It's, you know, an entrepreneur thing where we start going, okay, I've got this one completed. What's next? And I'm excited for what's next, but I'm excited for what's now too. Mm-hmm. And I will come back the next time around. And I would love to just continue to engage the conversation with you and your listeners as we all move to that brave, beautiful you on this journey that we are on.
Oh, and it is a beautiful journey. Real quick, I know you spoke of gratitude, and it means a lot to you personally. You can hear that deep within your voice and in your heart. You have something special for our audience.
Yes, I love giving away gifts. This is one of my favorite things to do. And so this is a gift. And I'm going to say it slowly because sometimes I go too fast. But if your listeners will text the word gratitude mm-hmm. to the number 44222, so the word gratitude, text it to 44222, you will receive a copy, an e-copy, and it's an electronic copy of my gratitude journal that takes you through how to find gratitude when it feels like there's nothing left to feel grateful for.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I mean, just such a gem. Thank you. And I know everybody's already texting. Don't hang up yet because we're still not done. No.
And this is what it looks like there.
Ooh, love it.
It's just a little journal that will get you started on those days where it feels like I have nothing to be grateful for. The money's gone. The security is gone. Or even just, you know, there are days I can remember when everything was going good, but I had forgotten to do laundry and my daughter didn't have clean jeans to wear to school. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like I could find gratitude. So it doesn't have to be for the big things that are hard. There's lots of daily little things that are hard. And finding gratitude in all of them will make it a little bit easier.
Yes, because sometimes just getting dinner on the table for everybody to eat, that you're just grateful for.
Absolutely. Or getting everybody to whatever activity they have on yes. time. That was always my big thing. How to get everybody in the right place at the right time.
And pick them up and not forget one.
Oh, well, I may have done that once or twice, but we won't tell that secret.
That's right. That's for another episode.
Exactly.
Well, what is one of your favorite quotes or verses or anything that, or maybe it's your own quote that you want to share to kind of leave us with?
Well, I am such a quote-oriented person, so I would say for this time here, probably my favorite quote is one of my own, mm-hmm. which is that it is amazing what happens when you realize you can eat anything anytime, you stop wanting to eat everything all the time.
Mm. All right, say that one more time so it can sink in.
When you realize you can eat anything at any time, you stop wanting to eat everything all the time.
You heard it, farmer. Food for the journey. Stop fighting your weight. Start finding your way. Jill, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you here. And I am going to hold you to it. I mean, provided that, you know, the Lord lets us, you know, live another day every day, we definitely want to have you back.
Oh, thank you. It's such a delight to be here. I love that you have listeners in so many places, because that's the joy of the internet, is that we get to share our story with people in places that I would never be able to visit on my own. Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, you're so welcome. And before we sign off, tell us where we can find you.
There are several places you can find me, but the best place is at jilldaviscoaching.com. You can send me an email from there. There's videos, there's ideas and blog posts, or I'm really not a huge technology person. So if you just want to send me an email, it's super simple. It's Jill at JillDavisCoaching.com. And I do try to reach everybody within 24 to 48 hours. I'd love to step into your kitchen and just be a part of your world as you go on this journey.
Oh, beautiful. And we will definitely have all that information in the show notes. So if you're driving, oh, please don't have a wreck or anything. Or if you're running on the treadmill, wherever you are, maybe you're just having a cup of coffee with us. Cheers. We will definitely have all that information for you in the show notes. Jill, thank you so much. Food for the journey. Pick up your copy. Blessings, my dear. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
And same to you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Feeling inspired, ready to train for life, and love your journey? Visit createyournow.com for more incredible resources to help you along the way. We'll see you next time on Create Your Now, Your Best Selfie. And remember, always be sure you consult your physician before beginning any health and fitness plan.